Chapter 7. Can we categorize people? Individual differences. While the previous chapter looked at typical developmental processes and patterns, emphasizing the similarities between people, this chapter is concerned with differences between people. Most of us prefer to think of ourselves as unique individuals, but is it possible to categorize the differences between us? And is it possible to identify the determinants of such differences? On the practical side, psychologists have developed ways of measuring people so as to find out more about the similarities and differences between them. These psychological assessments often take the form of paper and pencil measures, such as aptitude or achievement tests, which are used to measure abilities or accomplishments, or to assess suitability for particular educational or occupational positions. Psychological measurement. Psychological tests, or psychometric instruments, need to be both reliable and valid. That is, they should consistently measure the variable that they claim to measure. For example, a test of reading ability would not be considered a good test if it gave the same person very different scores when tested a few days apart, which would indicate low reliability. Similarly, the test would lack validity if a person who could not read well scored highly on it. In order to be useful, psychological tests must also be standardized, which means that there must be an established set of norms against which to compare individual scores. Standardizing tests involves giving the test to a large group of the type of people it is intended for, and using statistics to calculate norms, to work out what is an average score, and what proportion of the population score different amounts above or below this average. These norms can then be used to interpret an individual's test score. For instance, IQ tests are the best-known example of a psychometric test, and they are designed so that the population's average score is 100, and that 95% of the population score between 70 and 130. So someone scoring 132 can be judged to be well above average, in the top 2.5%. Psychologists have also found that the way in which a test is administered and the conditions of testing can influence the results. If the lighting is poor, or the person does not hear or understand the instructions, then their score may be artificially low. Thus, the conditions under which the test is administered must also be standardized. The test must be given to each person in exactly the same way, under similar conditions, if the results are to be valid. Psychometric tests are used to assess a wide variety of abilities and attributes, and this chapter will focus on the two facets of individual differences that have been most intensively studied and measured: intelligence and personality. As in other areas of psychology, there has been much debate about whether individual differences in intelligence and personality result from inheritance or from environmental influences, nature or nurture. Intelligence. Despite being one of the most important concepts in psychology, intelligence is one of the most elusive to define. Intelligence can simply be viewed as the ability to respond adaptively to one's environment. But this ability to respond adaptively may involve many aspects, such as being able to think logically, rationally, and abstractly, as well as the ability to learn and to apply this learning in new situations. Psychologists have questioned whether intelligence is a common thread underlying all mental processes, or whether it reflects several different factors or types of intelligence. The abilities of idiot savants, people with low IQs but one extraordinary ability, such as being able to name the day of the week of any date in the last 10 years, suggest that an individual can have vastly different abilities in different areas. Furthermore, a question of great practical interest has been whether intelligence is predetermined or inborn, or whether it can be learned or enhanced in any way. Intelligence tests. One of the simplest definitions of intelligence is to define it as what IQ tests measure, a circular definition that raises issues concerning the relationship between IQ tests and definitions of intelligence. The way in which intelligence is defined influences the tests that are designed to measure it. For example, a two-factor model supposes that intelligence is made up of a general factor and specific factors, whereas other models suggest that there are a number of independent specific factors, such as numerical reasoning, memory, musical ability, word fluency, visuospatial ability, perceptual speed, insight into oneself, and understanding of others, but no single general factor. Another approach has been to examine the processes involved in intelligence, such as the speed of processing, how information is represented internally, or the strategies used to solve problems. Disagreements concerning definitions of intelligence lead to difficulties in constructing tools to measure it. Any intelligence test is based on a particular definition or conceptualization of intelligence, and thus may reflect the biases of the investigator. For example, timed tests place more emphasis on the speed of processing, whereas other tests may be designed to measure separate, specific factors or an innate general ability. Most intelligence tests contain several subscales consisting of different types of questions. Some may simply ask for information with questions such as, how many months are there in a year? Or what is the capital of Australia? Other subscales may assess the person's digit span by asking them to repeat increasingly long strings of numbers forwards or backwards, or assess their arithmetic by asking questions like, raffle tickets cost 76 pence each. If I bought 6 tickets, how much change would I get from 10 pounds? Vocabulary or comprehension may be assessed by asking for definitions of common words, or by asking what the similarity is between word pairs such as orange banana or reward punishment. You would need to say that they were both a means of influencing the behavior of others to get the maximum points. Other subscales may involve arranging pictures in the best order so they tell a story, or may be more practical, such as arranging blocks to copy a design, or doing jigsaw-like puzzles. Intelligence tests usually give a score expressed as an intelligence quotient, or IQ. As mental ability increases during the first 18 years of life, the raw test scores must be adjusted in the light of the person's chronological age. This is done with reference to norms for the person's age group. For children, scores are sometimes expressed as a mental age. Thus, a particularly bright 7-year-old child who performs as well as the average 10-year-old could be said to have a chronological age of 7, but a mental age of 10. Although they are widely used, intelligence tests have been criticized on many grounds. A fundamental difficulty is that they do not measure intelligence itself, but attempt to measure the qualities that are thought to reflect it. They have been validated primarily in terms of educational achievement, which may be less of a product of intelligence and more a product of other factors such as social class, opportunity, and motivation. Furthermore, intelligence tests are based on the idea that intelligence is an accurately measurable quantity, unaffected by temporary factors such as the situation, the person's state of mind, motivation, or recent experience. In fact, IQ scores are affected by temporary situational factors, and furthermore, they can be increased by practice at doing IQ tests. A particularly controversial result of intelligence testing has been the finding that Black Americans score significantly lower than White Americans on standard intelligence tests. In fact, most ethnic groups score lower than White middle-class groups on IQ tests. This finding has been interpreted by some as evidence that some races are intellectually inferior. But other results, such as the finding that German babies fathered by Black and White American soldiers have similar IQs, show that the difference between Blacks and Whites' IQ scores is not due to genetic inferiority of Blacks. It is much more likely that it reflects a deficit in standard IQ tests. They are biased in favor of White middle-class cultures. Questions such as being asked who led the country during a certain war may be biased towards those who have been educated in Western societies, who had relatives living in the country during that period, and who have a good command of the English language. There have been attempts to construct culture fair tests, which do not ask for culturally biased information and may not use language at all. However, it has proved almost impossible to be fair to more than one culture at a time. Furthermore, if intelligence is defined as the ability to respond adaptively to one's environment, some would argue that a bias towards White middle-class cultures is a realistic bias, given the current domination of these cultures in many societies. One suggestion that reconciles some of the disagreement about what intelligence is and whether it is inborn is the view that there are two basic types of intelligence, one that reflects a genetic potential or an inborn basic ability, and another that is acquired or learned as experience interacts with potential. In 1963, Cattell suggested that fluid intelligence is the inborn ability to solve abstract problems, whereas crystallized intelligence involves practical problem-solving and knowledge, which comes from experience. Is intelligence influenced by the environment? Psychologists often attempt to find out if something is determined by the environment or by genetics through studying identical twins, who are genetically identical, who have been brought up in different environments, or by looking at the similarity in intelligence between family members who are more or less closely related. The evidence from these studies supports both cases. For example, the similarity in intelligence between identical twins brought up together is much greater than that of those who have been separated early in life, suggesting a role for the environment in the development of intelligence. Furthermore, studies of adopted children show that their IQs are more similar to those of their adoptive than biological parents. However, there is a greater similarity of intelligence between identical twins than between fraternal twins, suggesting a role for genetics. So, both genetics and environmental factors exert an influence on intelligence, and it may not be possible, or even useful, to try to work out which is most important. Moreover, it is not always possible to separate genetic from environmental influences. For instance, a separated twin or adopted child may intentionally be placed in an environment that is similar to its original home. Or the environment may influence the way in which a genetic potential is realized, as when mothers with lower socioeconomic status receive poorer prenatal care and have smaller babies. Can intelligence be increased? A question that is of greater practical use is whether intelligence can be enhanced by environmental influences. Even minimal interventions, such as giving dietary or vitamin supplements, have been shown to increase children's IQs by as much as 7 points, possibly through their effect on general health and thus on factors such as energy, concentration, and attention. There is also evidence showing that the amount of parental attention a child receives affects its IQ. This may explain why there is a significant correlation between birth order and IQ, because the first child usually gets more attention, which may enhance IQ. Some studies suggest that educational interventions may also have an effect on later attainment. For instance, the Head Start project was intended to compensate American preschool children for the effects of a disadvantaged environment. Daycare centers were set up to provide these children with extra stimulation and education, and their cognitive and social functioning was compared, over several years, with that of children who had not attended daycare centers. Although the initial results were discouraging, suggesting that any advantage for the Head Start group was short-lived, later reports found that there was a sleeper effect. The Head Start group scored higher on ability tests, and this advantage increased as they got older. On a practical level, the children in the Head Start group were less likely to be in a remedial class or to repeat a year at school, and were more likely to want to succeed academically. There was also an effect on the parents. The mothers of the Head Start children reported more satisfaction with their children's schoolwork and had higher occupational expectations for their children. Similarly, other studies have found that daycare interventions can increase IQ, and so can the type of school. In one study, children who went to more academic schools showed an average increase of 5 IQ points, whereas those who went to less academic schools showed, on average, a decrease of 1.9 points. What can be concluded from these studies on intelligence and IQ? First, there has yet to be agreement on a definition or model of intelligence. While we all have a general idea of what intelligence is, we use the term to describe many different things, and this may be because it does in fact have a number of aspects which are more or less closely related to each other. The difficulties in agreeing on a definition of intelligence are reflected in the tests that are used to measure it, and hence they do not always appear to be fair measures. For example, they are biased towards white middle-class cultures. It seems likely that intelligence is too complex and poorly defined a construct to be reflected by a single number such as IQ. On the practical side, studies of intelligence have shown that while IQ is determined by both genetic and environmental influences, it is possible to manipulate environmental circumstances to produce enduring benefits, both in terms of IQ and achievement. Personality. As a concept, personality is possibly even more central in psychology and even more difficult to define than intelligence. Loosely speaking, personality reflects a characteristic set of behaviors, attitudes, interests, motives, and feelings about the world. It includes the way in which people relate to others and is thought to be relatively stable throughout life. One of the motivations behind psychologists' efforts to identify and measure the ways in which people's personalities differ is to be able to predict their future behavior so as to anticipate, modify, or control such behavior. However, measuring personality suffers from similar difficulties as those inherent in measuring intelligence, because, like intelligence, it cannot be measured directly. It can only be inferred from the behaviors that are thought to reflect it. Several theories of personality have been proposed. Here is a summary of the main approaches and their view of personality. Categorical type. People are fitted into broad categories, with each type being qualitatively different from the others. For example, type A or B, introvert or extrovert. Trait, a descriptive approach in which people are defined according to how much of each of a list of traits they have. For example, high conscientiousness, low introversion. Behaviorist, views personality as merely a reflection of the person's learning history. They simply repeat the responses that have been reinforced in the past. Cognitive, sees beliefs, thoughts, and mental processes as primary in determining behavior across situations. Psychodynamic, based on Freud's work, and sees personality as determined by intrapsychic structures, that is, the id, ego, and superego, and by unconscious motives or conflicts from early childhood. Individual, emphasizes higher human motives and views personality as the individual's complete experience, rather than as having separate parts. Situational, suggests that personality is not consistent, but is merely a response to the situation. We learn to behave in ways that are appropriate to the situation through reinforcement. Finally, interactive, which combines the situational and trait approaches, so suggests that people have a tendency to behave in certain ways, but that this is moderated by the demands of different situations. Each of these different approaches reflects a comprehensive theory, and it is not possible to cover any of them in depth here. Instead, we will highlight some of the main ways in which they differ and use Eysenck's 1965 theory of personality, which combines elements of both the type and trait approaches, as an example. Different theories of personality vary in the degree to which they see behaviors as determined by people or by the situations they are in, and we tend to overestimate the importance of personality in explaining another's behavior. This is referred to as the fundamental attribution error, which we'll discuss in Chapter 9. However, the situational and behavioral approaches may go too far when they suggest that all variation in behavior is determined by situational factors or conditioned by patterns of reinforcement. If this were the case, then we would not be able to think of examples of when someone else responded differently from how we would have ourselves in an identical situation. Approaches to personality also vary in the degree to which they see people as types, or as having more or less of certain traits. Type theories tend to emphasize the similarities between people, whereas trait approaches stress the differences between individuals and their inherent uniqueness. Eysenck's approach combines both. He used complex statistical techniques to analyze and group together the hundreds of traits shown by large numbers of people. For example, optimistic, aggressive, or lazy. Initially, he came up with two groupings in the form of dimensions, introversion-extroversion and stability-neuroticism, and he has since added a third, intelligence-psychoticism, which is unrelated to the other two dimensions. Each dimension is made up of a number of traits, and someone who is high on one trait is thought likely to be high on the other traits in that dimension, giving an overall type. Eysenck's theory of personality is illustrated in Figure 15. Most people score somewhere in the middle on the introversion-extroversion and neuroticism-stability dimensions, but the majority score lower on psychoticism. Most people score somewhere in the middle on the introversion-extroversion and neuroticism-stability dimensions, but the majority score lower on psychoticism. Eysenck proposed a biological basis to his theory, suggesting that these personality dimensions were related to biological differences in brain functioning. For example, he proposed that extroverts have lower cortical arousal, or activity level in the area of the brain that is thought to be responsible for moderating arousal levels, and thus they seek more stimulation and excitement than introverts. In contrast, introverts are thought to be more socially conforming, more sensitive to reinforcement, have lower sensory thresholds, and therefore feel pain more easily. However, there is only limited support for biological differences between different personality types. A psychological test has been developed to measure the dimensions of Eysenck's theory, and it uses questions such as, "Do you like talking to people so much that you never miss the opportunity to talk to a stranger?" and "Can you easily get some life into a dull party?" to indicate extroversion. Answering yes to questions such as, "Do you often worry about things you shouldn't have done or said?" and "Are you troubled by feelings of inferiority?" is taken to indicate greater neuroticism. What use are psychological tests? One of the main motivations behind the development of psychological tests measuring attributes such as personality and intelligence has been to be able to predict behavior. However, the evidence suggests that personality and intelligence may not be as fixed as the concept of psychometric testing suggests. While there is evidence that some personality traits remain relatively stable, particularly after adolescence and early adulthood, there is mixed evidence about whether such personality traits predict the individual's actual behavior in a given situation. This consistency paradox reflects the fact that we tend to see other people as being relatively consistent, as in, John is the outgoing type. Yet research studies found that such traits did not predict a person's actual behavior in a given situation very well. Examining behavior across a range of situations shows that personality traits predict behavior better at the general level. That is, John was outgoing in the majority of situations. And similarly, we can predict an equal number of heads and tails when repeatedly tossing a coin, without being able to predict the outcome of the next toss. In this case, behavior is influenced by many variables, not only by external ones, but also by internal ones, such as mood and fatigue. There has also been much interest in whether IQ predicts behavior. While there is a relationship between IQ and aspects of intelligent behavior, such as job performance, it is not a strong relationship, and within most occupations, there is a wide range of IQs. In fact, some studies suggest that socioeconomic background is a better predictor of future academic and occupational success than IQ. A long-term study of children with very high IQs found that some became very successful adults, but others did not, and there were no differences in IQ between the two groups. There were, however, great differences in motivation. The more successful ones had much more ambition and drive to succeed. Although psychologists have made significant advances in quantifying and measuring the differences between people, some caution is needed in using such information. In interpreting any single test score, it is vital to remember that many factors may have influenced it, including genetic potential, experience, motivation, and conditions of testing. Thus, the single scores, such as those provided by an IQ test, cannot be seen as defining the limit of a person's ability. Rather, they should be viewed as an indication of their current level, or the approximate range within which they would generally fall. Other dangers associated with psychometric testing arise from value judgments about certain scores. For example, it may be implied that higher scores are better, and thus that people who achieve them are superior. In its most extreme form, this argument can be used for social and political purposes, to support ideas such as eugenics, and to discourage people with lower IQs from reproducing. But generally speaking, knowing more about how to measure the ways in which people differ according to dimensions such as intelligence and personality has helped us to understand more about the number of contributing variables, the potential for change, and the relationship to achievement.